I think Illinois gets too bad of a rap sometimes because, you know, you got one giant city that seems to cast its big shadow over the whole state, and I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, maybe the state should get together and, you know, I don't know how to say it, secede from Chicago.
There you go. Illinois, secede from Chicago. That's good. This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 421 of your weekly practical show by a practical guy. Everyday guy, that's me, just kind of taking an everyday approach to carrying guns. Well, this episode is all about what happened last weekend, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced in Illinois, up near the Wisconsin border. Ben Branham and I, on this episode, we talk about a lot of different things in terms of just overall shooting handguns and getting better. So it's not just about the class. It's also about shooting and getting better at shooting and improving and adjusting our skills for the maximum effectiveness. I think you're going to enjoy it. We had a lot of good conversations throughout the whole weekend, and that's what we're going to do. Remember, this podcast, this episode, and the entire podcast as a whole is sponsored by Concealment Solutions. And, you know, I lent out one of my Cobra outside the waistband holsters to a student at the class for a shield. He had a holster that just wasn't going to work very well for our class, and so it's a good thing I took a shield holster, because actually my backup gun was a Smith & Wesson shield, but I never used it because my Glock 19 didn't go down to where I had to switch over to my shield. So I lent him my Cobra outside the waistband. He was impressed with it. If you like carrying inside the waist, the Black Mamba CE at Concealment Solutions is another real good one. So you can get 10% off your order on everything except belts just by using the coupon code HandgunWorld. Okay, so let's get right into it here. Let's go through the first segment of my conversation with Ben Branham of the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. Okay, so we're here in the rental mobile studio. Ben Branham and I, we got this rental car up in Wisconsin, headed for Illinois to start day two of Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. Ben, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Not my favorite mobile studio. I like yours better.
Well, this was not too bad. You know, we got ourselves a comfortable Chevy Impala, but you know, we're making it, and we're going behind the Iron Curtain every day into the great state of Illinois.
Yeah, Illinois. Got to add the S, because you guys are just screwed.
You got to say it wrong, right?
Yeah, I figured I Southern boy, I can't say it right for some reason. Everybody tells me I would say it wrong, and then I'm like, no, the S is because Chicago is screwing you.
This is interesting because we're staying in Wisconsin where we can carry because they accept our Texas carry permits. And then as soon as we cross the border, we're not allowed to carry. And I guess we're told that as long as we stay in our car, we can keep our guns on. But as soon as we get out of our car, like this morning, we're going to breakfast, we got to leave our weapons in the car because we're not allowed to carry in Illinois.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. Bob's got his on right now and he's going to try to take it off when we get to the restaurant. I don't need an Illinois State Trooper to see me pull my gun off. So I left my gun in the trunk. We'll see how that goes.
So let's talk about the first day of class. You know, we've got some students. We got a mixture of students. We've got some that obviously have trained before. Got a couple females in the class, which is nice. And we also have some people that look like that they haven't done much training, which is always good. So we started them off the first day, right in the beginning, just with marksmanship skills. How do you think that went?
That went pretty good. We have kind of a, for marksmanship, I think we have an average class, which is cool. They all can do groups. They all can make the make hits on a target at a reasonable distance. So it's always nice to start with that. And really, it's a couple hints. And, you know, we do two or three groups every class. And I always have the shooters shooting a better group the second or third time than they did the first time, with just a little bit of hints on how they're doing. And it's always funny to see the students that are shooting better groups. And they kind of look at me with a frowny face at the first thing in class, because what they can do for me is unacceptable. I always want to push them to be better. So we got students that will even... We've had students come to the class that will make a one-hole group, but it'll be strung up and down. And so I'll be like, oh, this is strung up and down. That's no good. You can make it tighter than that. And I'll give them a hint on what they're doing to string it up and down. You really got to concentrate on that trigger press and not moving the other fingers to string your group up and down. And that's why it's going up and down. And they kind of look at me with a frowny face going, huh? I think it sets the tone for the class on that I'm just not going to accept your skill where you are right now. I'm going to make you better at everything you do with the gun throughout the weekend.
Which is why you pay us to come to these classes. And I want to throw in there, you're good at that, Ben. You're good at helping people get better. And you and I do not do it in such a way, like we don't yell at students. We don't, you know, belittle students or anything like that. I got a compliment from one of our students. I won't mention the name because I haven't been given the permission to divulge their name, but I got a compliment yesterday that we worked well with the students, that we taught them how to improve in a nice, positive way instead of jumping down their throat and telling them that they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, and I always have the disclaimer in front of class that you're here, you paid me a lot of money. I goof off a lot. I'm here to teach you. I want to make you better, but if I do anything that offends you or is really wrong, please tell me so I can stop doing it. You didn't come here to get pay $400 or $500 for the weekend to have me yell at you and scream at you and belittle you. And so I kind of think that's our style of teaching. We're just laid back, and we just want to make everybody better shooters.
Exactly. So we don't just teach, though, shooting tight groups. As a matter of fact, we just do that to make sure that everybody has their fundamentals squared away. I thought this group of students did pretty well with the malfunction drills after that. They seemed to pick that up pretty quick. What do you think?
Yeah, it was really easy for this group to pick up the whole malfunction, especially the remedial one. They had more trouble putting the spent cartridge in the gun to yeah. create the malfunction than we did to actually clear the malfunctions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have groups that somehow, and it's weird, we'll have a group that will pick up something like that really, really fast, and we can just run right through it. And then we have other groups that we teach the same thing the same way, and we'll have the whole group kind of just looking at us like a monkey doing a math problem when they're trying to manipulate the gun. So it's kind of cool that we can get a smaller class like this and 10 students, and we can go through, because we don't let big classes come. I mean, our biggest class has been probably 20 students, and that was
24 has been our
24,
biggest.
And that was like 5 or 6 too many. We yeah. figured out that 18 needs to be the top when we're both out there, and so we can keep the class moving and keep, you know, the group will pick up this so we can run through that, and then we can slow down at other spots so we can use our time effectively so we don't have to be governed by the watch all the time.
Yeah, we got 9 students in this class, and that's a good level of students. That's a good number of students to have, because it's real easy to give them some good personal attention.
Yeah, the students get a lot out of it when it's under 10. For us, we like to have 10 to 15 students as our optimal class.
That's ideal.
But yeah. 9 is a nice number. We still pay ourselves to get here, and then all the students is a small enough class where they can have fun and know everybody. So that's always, I've been to classes where they're like 60 people on the line, and you kind of meet the guy next to you, but that's about it, because there's just so many students, they only meet 2 or 3 people.
Yeah. You know, since we're on the topic of malfunctions, We noticed yesterday in the first day of the class alone, just the first day, and I estimate that the students shot probably between 200 and 250 rounds. We noticed two Glocks have malfunctions. One of them was mine. I think mine was a shooter-induced malfunction. I was shooting one-handed, and I think there was one shot where I just didn't have a real good firm grip on the pistol, and it stovepiped, and that's common, especially with a Glock. We had a 1911 fail, of course. We had an issue with that. And then we had a major failure with, wait for it, a revolver.
Yeah. A Ruger revolver.
A Ruger GP100 revolver. Now, we're not picking on revolvers, but to all of you listening who say, I carry a revolver because it never fails, Ben and I saw one have a major failure yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah, it rotated the cylinder and didn't fire. Can't figure out why, because I was watching her shoot it, and good shooter, running across the line, doing a movement drill. So I'm watching it shoot, and it goes bang, bang, and I'm not sure if it clicked or not, but I saw the cylinder rotate.
Yeah.
Because I was watching the gun.
I did too.
But I didn't see the hammer come back and go forward, but I saw the cylinder rotate. And then it just stopped, and it didn't do anything. And so the shooter thought the gun was empty, went to reload it, and then fired another round anyways, and the next round fired. So we kind of stopped. We're like, something's really not right here. And we tried to dump the brass and pick them up, and the brass fell out on the ground instead of being able to catch them out of the revolver. So we didn't exactly get what was wrong. Checked the revolver. All the timing was good. The transfer bar safety is working. And it seemed like everything's working perfect. And then after that, the gun worked fine. But it had this weird hiccup where, I don't know. And with the Ruger, I tried to short stroke the trigger to see if that was it.
We thought she was short stroking it at first.
Yeah. Well, with my Ruger LCR, my small gun, if I short stroke the trigger, it will rotate the cylinder and then you can let off the trigger again to reset it all the way, and then it'll skip around. So it actually rotates the cylinder and skips around. With the GP100, the bigger revolver, I was trying it, because I borrowed the gun, had to figure out what was wrong with it. And if you short stroke the trigger, it just locks it up. It freezes the gun until you release the trigger all the way and go back into it. So no idea what happened with that gun. It just, for some reason, it decided, I'm not going to fire right now. And so guns are mechanical devices. No matter what you have, no matter what you think you have, no matter how good you think your gun is, sooner or later, it's just going to have a little weird hiccup where it just goes, eh.
Yeah, and that's why we teach malfunctions in our class. And that's why you should know how to clear a malfunction. Because they're mechanical objects. They're basically machines that you hold in your hand that fire bullets, and they are going to malfunction from time to time. And you know, the worst time you could ever have a malfunction is in the middle of a fight. So we teach you how to clear that, and you got to be able to, you know, do that. And so, and I find that a lot of people don't practice that much, because whenever we teach this in a class, a lot of times some of the students act like they've never done this before.
Yeah, and everybody knows the tap rack bang drill, and we do tap rack roll to the right. If you've learned your malfunction drill, your immediate drill, and you're doing dry practice with your autoloader, you've got to cycle the slide every time. If you, I don't know, for the next week when you dry practice, for the next five or six times you do it, if you tap rack roll to the right every time you click the gun, you will program yourself to do that when the gun goes click.
Yeah. So then we did what we normally do in the afternoon of the first day, is we got the students moving and shooting. And real moving and shooting. You know, some instructors will teach, take two steps to the left and then stop and fire. And then, you know, next time take two steps to the right, stop and fire. That's not moving and shooting. All that is changing your shooting position. We teach them to stay on the move and return fire and make decent hits. We start with moving forward, and then we start with retreating and shooting that way. I kind of thought that the students picked that up pretty quickly. What do you think?
This class did real well. Normally we have, this is one of those drills, and it's real weird because you have to let your subconscious do most of the math.
Yeah, you do.
When you're walking, and we start with walking forward and backwards, it's easier for the students to see. yes, there's not very many times that you're going to advance on a target shooting, but it is possible, and there is reasons you might need to do that, and there's more reasons to move backwards. But going forward makes it easier for them to get a shooting platform and learn to let their subconscious do the math. And when I say that, is you don't think about where your feet are when you're going to fire the round, whether one foot's in the air, both feet are on the ground, left, right foot, whatever. When you start thinking about that, you're not thinking about your shooting, and all of it just kind of, you can see it. It's fun to watch students, and I almost want to tape some of the new students doing this to put it in a blooper reel so everybody can see. I can see when they're trying to think about all this other stuff, because they get this weird stutter step that they can't walk and chew gum at the same time. So my always thing is, you've got to let it go. You just got to let your subconscious do the math of where you need to shoot, and you just watch the front sight, and when it's where it needs to be, you just press the trigger. It really is that easy. If you pay attention and you try to figure out where to shoot, where you're stepping, and how to walk while you're shooting, you never hit the target, and you never actually, your gait is off when you're stepping, because you'll see people, they'll take a half step, and then their foot is halfway to the ground, and they pause right there, and they try to shoot, and then they fall forward, because you can't pause with your foot halfway off the ground, halfway through your step. It gets kind of ridiculous, and I try not to laugh.
Turn
and I
left onto Bloomfield Road.
This is where I have a bad sense of humor, and I will joke with the students. You look like you almost fell over on that time. Did you feel like, I don't know what happened? Well, I do. You're not paying attention to your shooting. You're paying attention to your walking. I tell students, you've been walking for 20, 30, 40 years. Just walk the way you want to go, like you normally walk, and we'll shoot on top of that.
And it's amazing, because people can walk. Everybody can walk. People could put two grocery bags in their hands, and they can walk for a long time carrying groceries. But the minute you put a gun in their hand, all of a sudden they forget how to walk, and they forget how to do something. I don't know what it is. It's like you put a gun, a live gun that's firing live bullets in someone's hands, and their mind, you know, seems to just, you know, take off on them in ways that it normally doesn't take off. You know, students need to just relax. People need to relax. Just because you have a gun in your hand doesn't mean that you can't walk, and it also doesn't mean that you have to be standing still to fire a shot. I think the reason why you see people sometimes looking a little goofy while they're walking is because subconsciously something is telling them, okay, I got to stop, and I got to make the shot. And that's not true. We teach you how to just keep moving and make the good shot and the good hit, right?
Yeah, I think it's two things. One is, how often do you walk and shoot? You just don't. So you're programmed to stand flat-footed in a certain stance.
That's true.
And make that shot.
Yeah, that's true.
That's you programming yourself on the square range. Nobody else. It's you. And then we watch TV. How does every actor in every movie, everywhere, and even on, I don't know, when you watch actually good people move, they all walk differently when they have a gun in their hand. And I got to admit, as a Marine, I move differently than just a normal walk. But I practiced that Groucho walk for hours and hours on end
when
I moved around.
Yeah.
So the only way to change the way you're going to walk is to get into that walking stance and do it for hours. Because you've been walking your whole life. If I try to reprogram your walk in one day, it's not going to work. And when I say hours, I mean hours and hours over weeks, clearing buildings and stuff. That's how you pick up that Groucho walk and you learn it. And you just, it was horrible when you go to mount school in the Marine Corps to start with. You think you're going to have fun, and you do, but they go, we're going to crawl, walk, run. So the first thing you're going to do is learn how to hold your weapon again. And that takes you about 3 hours. And the next thing you're going to do is learn how to walk again with your weapon. And you practice that for 3 to 5 hours. So, you know, imagine just walking up and down the street with your rifle pointed up in this Groucho walk for 3 to 5 hours. You get tired, you just get bored. And we just don't have that time as civilians that we're just going to learn, you know, 3 to 5 hours how to walk and then spend the next 2 weeks doing that, walking like that.
Right.
So no. we need a shortcut. And the shortcut is walk normal, don't think about it, focus on your shooting, and you'll be set.
Yeah.
That subconscious mind will take over, and it will do all the math of when you're supposed to fire the gun.
And sometimes, you know, we let our conscious mind interfere with our subconscious mind. You know, I find that, you know, you're going to figure it out if you just, basically a lot of times it's relaxing. I saw a couple students getting highly, highly nervous. And part of the problem is if you get real nervous, you're telling your conscious mind to take over. And if you relax, then your subconscious mind can take over. And that's typically when you do it right. You get nervous, that conscious mind, you're like, oh crap, I don't know if I can do this. This might not work. Oh boy, what's going to happen now? Oh no, what's Ben going to say? What's Bob going to say when this is all over with? That's their conscious mind taking over. What do you think?
And of course, they're doing it in front of the group too, because most of this we have to do one at a time.
Yep.
So that's always kind of helpful too, but... Yeah, they just get wrapped around the axle, and it's really your conscious mind really can only do so many cycles per minute. You know, you think computers. Well, your conscious mind is your laptop. Your subconscious mind is the huge mainframe running in the background that your laptop is plugged into.
Ah, yeah, okay.
So it's a way more powerful computer, and it can do way more things and way more cycles per minute if you want to talk computer stuff. It can just do way more than your subconscious mind can ever hope to do.
Yeah.
So if you look at it like that and you let your subconscious and trust it, you can actually do a lot more and get faster and better.
Yeah. So we finished the first day, which was yesterday, on the moving and shooting, and a lot of them got pretty good at it. I was impressed because, you know, we were taping up the targets. We were taping the bad misses, the ones that were way off. But we didn't have to do as much taping as I thought we were going to do. I thought it was going to be a lot worse. I thought that they did pretty well for the first day.
Yeah, they picked it up real quick. They moved around real well. And even the ones that seemed nervous about it were good. And then the ones that were overly excited about it, I get worried about those guys too, because they want to go as fast as possible and don't want to slow down and learn. And they did real well too. They slowed down a little bit, and the people that were real nervous picked it up, and by the end of the day we're doing real well. We get to start today again, moving and shooting again.
Yeah, today we're going to be picking that up again, and we're going to be doing some other cool stuff like how to shoot and engage multiple targets and how to deal with multiple adversaries. And you know, we're going to do a hostage taker drill, which that always seems to go over very well. When I talk to students after the classes, it's one of the most eye-opening exercises and eye-opening drills that we do. Some people really get surprised by that one.
And we're kind of mean about that one, too, but...
Oh, not that bad.
Okay, not that bad. It's, we mess with your psyche, too. Put some emotion in there, because that's always on the range, I can put a black piece of target up there and I can shoot a headshot, you know, probably up to 25 yards most times, you know, 99 out of 100.
Sure, yeah, me too.
You know, I start pushing it, and then mess with, that's a real person if you miss.
Yeah.
That you get so many emotions. And think about it being your family member. Oh God, if I screw this up, I'm gonna shoot my wife, or this guy's gonna shoot my wife. You know, all you got to do is do it right? No problem. No emotions. Yeah, right. It's, in the military, we call that a high pucker factor. You really get nervous because if you mess it up, everything is riding on that your whole life.
That pucker factor gets to people, doesn't it?
Yeah, you get pretty tight doing that. But yeah.
I said pucker, P-U-C-K-E-R, by the way. This is a family-friendly show. We both use the P word, P-U-C-K-E-R.
Yes, and that's what you call it in the Marine Corps, actually. You don't use vulgar language.
You don't use the other one, huh?
But yeah, it's vulgar enough as it is. Yeah, so, you know, Bob picked this up, and we picked this up over the years, and we keep playing with it, and we just keep... Yeah, we're able to make it worse for the students, really, and that's it's a good thing and a bad thing, so it gets them a little bit of emotions. And we've actually had a couple students cry.
We have, yeah. And, when Ben says we're mean, we're not really mean. We don't come down on top of you, but it's an emotional exercise, and it's something that, you know, hey, let's face it. If you get in a gunfight, it's going to be an emotional thing, especially afterwards. You know, during the gunfight, you're just trying to save your life. So your adrenaline is sky high at the max that it's ever been. You're freaked out. You want to save your life. Okay, you finally do what Bob and Ben taught you. You save your life. You win the gunfight. Now the emotions take over. And a lot of them sort of feel that in the hostage taker drill, don't they?
Yeah, we really kind of mess with their mind. And it's on purpose. It's really the only mean thing we do. But sometimes that one's just to get you better. And sometimes you got to, you know, forged by fire and iron sharpens iron, all that stuff to get better so that if it ever happens to you, you know what you can do. You know you've been there, you've done that, and you can just do what needs to be done so nobody dies that's not supposed to die.
All right, well, we just crossed over into Illinois, and the GPS is telling us that in a third of a mile, we're going to be at our breakfast restaurant. So for this segment, we will sign off. Talk to you guys later.
Hey, this is Lloyd Bailey, the Armed Lutheran, host of the Armed Lutheran Radio Podcast, reminding you that the podcast you're listening to is a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out all the great content at selfdefenseradio.net.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
All right, that was day one, and during the break here, I wanted to share some other things with you about supporting my podcast and Ben Branham's podcast, the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. We just put some new videos up on the Shooters Club, so all of you who are members, thank you. If you've been to one of our classes, usually for about a week, we offer a discount. The Shooters Club is only $75 a year or $8 a month. And I think we've got pretty close to 70 very instructional videos. So check that out. Go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com to sign up. And you could support my show without spending any extra money by making your Amazon purchases through my Amazon store at handgunworld.com. And that's a way to support the show as well. All right, so then we talked, Ben and I talked, at the conclusion of the class about day two. Here you go. All right, Ben, well, it's the class is over. We finished up the second day. How do you think it went?
We survived another class, and so did all our students. No extra holes, no extra problems.
But see, that's always a good thing. As long as there's no tragedies, nobody got shot, we didn't have to get the first aid kit out. Did you remember to get your first aid kit, by the way?
I hope so.
Yes, I did this time. You got a bad habit of leaving first aid kits at the range.
Oh, that gets really expensive really fast. No, I got it. We joke about nobody getting hurt, but that's really our first priority
as an
instructor, is that nobody gets hurt on the line, especially when we're doing a bunch of the advanced, and I say advanced stuff, but this is an intermediate level class, but by the time we get to day two, these guys are running and gunning, shooting multiple targets, we've got multiple people moving around the range and shooting at the same time, and then we have people moving around with loaded guns among other people, so, you know, our statistical, maybe, or our probability, probability starts to go up a little bit on day two of somebody actually getting hurt. But yeah, I mean, probability as if I just took anybody off the street. But probability, and when you take day one and then you take day two, I think we do pretty good because day one builds and day two builds. If you didn't pass day one, you don't get to go to day two.
I think we did extremely well. So, you know, this group of students, they handled the second day very well, too. We did see some more, what I think was interesting, was some more interesting gun malfunctions. We seemed to have a lot of them this weekend.
Yeah, this one was more than normal, but what didn't break? The poor guy lost the front sight on his Glock.
Yep.
I hate to be mean, but if you're Loctiting your front sight on your Glock, stop it. If you put red Loctite, the permanent stuff, on your Glock, and you'll want to cut the front sight off when you're done with it, that will work. If you put blue Loctite on your Glock front sight, like all the memes on Facebook say, because Facebook knows everything, you can't publish anything on the internet that's not true.
Exactly.
If you put blue Loctite on there, I don't guarantee it, but your probability of having your front sight flies off goes way up.
And that's strange. I would have thought the opposite.
Well, yeah, but I've just observation. Two observations. One, I've never seen a front sight without Loctite come off. So when that sight came off this morning, I went, well, did you Loctite it on? And I asked the question like accusative. And he goes, oh, of course I did. Yeah, I know you did because you lost it. Don't Loctite it. And then the other one, and that's just personal observation on the range. Every single one of them I've seen fly off has been Loctited on. I haven't seen one that wasn't Loctited on fly off.
Really? Okay.
Well, and then
I haven't had that experience.
And obviously, I'm asking the student because I didn't do it, so they could be, oh, of course I did. Chuck. It's possible, but I doubt it. And the other thing that I observed, because I'm an observer, right? Keen observer, that's what I do. No, I'm just kidding. Take your stock Glock from the factory, pull the front side off. Did they put Loctite on the front sight when they put the front sight on?
No, it doesn't come Loctited down.
So if it was a major issue, and I do know factory front sights have come off, but if it was a major, most of the time it's because people pull them off to maintain the gun and they put blue Loctite on it and then it comes off.
Yeah, or they break the plastic sights of the Glock also break off.
Yeah, so but I haven't seen the factory sight come off. I've seen it break off when you shear it off and you hit it on something, but I haven't seen it like pop off like this one did. And miracles of miracles, running around this outdoor range with leaf and fodder and rock on the ground and grass.
We found the site.
He found his site. One of the guys found the site.
Yep.
So, and it wasn't broken off or sheared off. And somehow the screw, he had a longer screw. So when the slide cycled, the barrel was in the way to let that screw fall out. So the screw stayed in the hole. The front sight went, woohoo, but the screw was there. And so he took it apart, guy had a Glock tool, and screwed it back together. And, you know, he finished the day without problems. I mean, he's like, how tight do I put it on? Well, good and snug if you're just using a screwdriver-style wrench.
Yep.
If you're using a T-handle or an actual wrench, snug. For me, when I use the screwdriver wrenches, I put them on pretty much as tight as I can get them with just the screwdriver. And they seem to stay. I haven't had one that I've put on fall off yet. And yep. I put on most of Bob's at this point. And so Bob shoots the snot out of most of his. So.
And they stay put.
No Loctite on there, but they stay put.
Yeah, so. They do. You know, one thing I noticed too is when we went to the long range shooting, we had some good long range shooters. Our maximum distance we went out to, I think, was it 50?
No, right at 70, oh. 70 meters by the actual...
70 meters. That wasn't, 70 meters.
That wasn't stepped off. I actually brought my range finder, and that thing's good. Plus or minus a meter out to 800 meters. So,
okay. And I'm going to brag a little bit. I pulled out my Glock 19 with an RMR red dot.
With the window, he cheated.
with the red dot, the cheater's gun. And Ben, you witnessed it. I made a one-handed 40-meter shot on a pepper popper steel target. First shot, first hit. Or first shot, one hit.
Yeah, you shot really well with the Glock and that window. That thing is... You are tuned well to that. That probably should be your carry gun. And you even say it's cheating out there. And I didn't, you know, I kind of kicked myself. I didn't want to ask you because all the students were there and everybody else would want to try it. And we were already late behind the class as it was. But yeah, I wanted to try it at 50, 60, 70 meters. And yeah, I shot crappy long range today. Normally, I'm the one that has no problem shooting my gun
That's
long
right.
range. And today, yeah, we went all the way out to 70 yards and I just kind of, 70 meters. My thing is meters. We went all the way out there. At 10 meters at a time, and we got out there, and I shot. I missed the first shot, and the second shot I hit at 70 meters without warming up. Everybody else got to start at 20 meters and warm all the way up. I just went cold right out there, missed the first shot, hit the second shot, and then I missed three one-handed shots in a row. Normally, I can do a one. These were small pepper poppers, so normally our target's a little bigger, but normally I can hit it first time, one-handed, right-handed. Left-handed,
That's
one-handed,
right.
I normally have to... work at it, and if I get 3, 4, or 5 rounds, I can generally make a hit left-handed. So I shot badly, and you shot exceptionally well.
And normally, I usually don't do very well past about
Past 25 yards, I usually start to struggle, but the rest of the students did pretty well, too.
We had the guy with the shield, the ported shield, that shot, like, first time at 70 meters.
First time 70 meters with a ported shield, and bing, he hit it.
Yeah, and we say little pepper poppers. These pepper poppers were about waist high with a 10-inch circle in the middle.
It was it 10 inches?
Yeah.
Okay.
So our host graciously measured it for us.
Uh-huh.
So we would know. I thought it was an 8-inch circle. It was a 10-inch circle. So it was kind of a big pepper popper, but it's not even close to, you know, it's waist high, so it's not even close to a human size. So if you can hit a pepper popper at 70 meters, hitting a human, I mean, a person's torso is twice as big as this thing. So it was interesting, and I love seeing the students do that. I get so excited for them. I'm giving them a little bit of tips here and there after watching them shoot all day.
Yep.
And I can generally get even the people that are struggling to make some pretty long hits. We had a couple that were struggling with accuracy throughout the day, and even they got out there with their guns, and they were making 40 and 50-meter shots.
Oh, yeah.
And not all of them made the 60 and 70-meter shot, but some of them were struggling, were hitting at 40 and 50 meters. And yep. I love doing that because their confidence just goes through the roof when you make a 50, 60, 70-meter shot with your handgun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it does go through the roof. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Ben, our host. Many thanks to Gary Doherty and his fiancée, Sherry. They were terrific hosts. They did a fantastic job. So they're probably listening, and we want to extend them a very nice thank you.
Fantastic. Loved meeting them. Salt of the earth people. If you're in Illinois and you need your carry permit, you need to look up Gary and get it from him. He's a real great guy. He'll treat you right.
You said it right this time. Illinois.
I said it right on that time on purpose, respecting Gary and Sherry. The rest of the time with the S, you guys know why.
Yeah, you said it earlier. So we, they seem to really enjoy the barricade shooting, too. Well, shooting around barricades. We're not shooting barricades. We're shooting around barricades.
That's always fun. Yeah, we had one of the students that really wanted to know about home defense.
Yep.
And he was super attentive when we got to there. We was talking about shooting from behind barricades, and really barricade is any cover, concealment, wall, doorway, anything. And we just put up barricades to shoot around them so that you can get used to that and know how to do it. I have a very specific technique that I learned from a $10,000 spec ops school. Thank you, by the way, the Marine Corps sent me and paid for it, which means all of you out there as taxpayers paid for it. I do appreciate it. It was an awesome school.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And I learned a ton. So I actually passed that knowledge on to other people. So, yeah, it's really easy. Put your outside foot forward and don't lean out. Stand straight up and down. Feet on line. Toes towards your target. I know that's super simple, and most people like, really?
It sounds simple, but when you get out there, it's not that simple.
I show you how to do it. It takes a little cajoling and a little kicking here and there because I've kicked people's feet. I'm like, how many times do I tell you? Put your feet online. I know it's weird, but try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, they all took to that really well, took to the discussion on three dimensions and long angles and home defense. I give out my home defense plan. And, yeah, that one student was very, very attentive, and he asked multiple questions about that. Really good guy. And he, single dad, wanted to protect his kids.
Yep. You know, I also noticed today that the students seem to pick things up faster than they did the first day. Maybe that's because they had that first day's worth of practice under their belt. But it seemed like they were catching on. They were catching on real good, and they were developing. And that's what we look for is developing somebody, because you can develop someone a lot in 2 days.
2 days, 600 rounds gets you incredibly good with the gun.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we talked about long distance accuracy, but we really don't do very much accuracy shooting. We do a couple groups in the morning of both days just to kind of get tuned up and work a little bit on the pistol to show what your pistol will do so that you know you can do it. And it's a confidence builder for the students, so they know that they can shoot the target. When they go, oh, but I don't yet, and blah, 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 and I get some stupid excuse because I've got them all.
Yeah.
Every single excuse of why they can't hit the target I've had.
Oh, yeah.
Including the gun.
I've heard
it's
them, too.
It's always the gun.
Sure it is.
And
has to be the gun.
Always the gun. So, yeah, we get them tuned up and shoot. But that's the only accuracy stuff we do. The rest of it, I just expect you to make body hits at varying distances from behind barricades, while on the move, from different positions, multiple targets. And then we go to that long range stuff, and that's really a 70 meters on a 10-inch circle, that's a precision shot with a
handgun. That's definitely a precision shot, yes.
And it sucks because you're looking over the front sight, and your front sight is a lot bigger than that 10-inch circle at 70 meters. So just getting you in tune with your gun and putting that much time under the gun and putting that much time running the gun and with an instructor telling you a little bit here and a little bit there on your accuracy stuff gets you that much in tune with the gun where you go out there and now you can make those precision shots.
Yeah, you know, speaking of those long distance shots or any precision shot, it's 80%, 85% trigger control and maybe the other 10 or 15% holding the gun still. That's all. I mean, you got to have good trigger fundamentals and hold your gun still. Don't let it move. That's what it is.
You know, Rob Latham is starting to do more and more interviews and talking about his technique. And he says for the last 5 years or something, he slaps the trigger. And we always say, press the trigger really nice and easy and perfectly to the rear. What we really need to do is pull the trigger without moving anything in the gun.
That's the key.
And the more I study it, the more we gorilla grip the gun, which means you move all your fingers instead of just your trigger finger. I can see the students, if I watch their forearm when they pull the trigger, I can see all the muscles in their forearms tighten up. Well, if all the muscles in your forearm move, that means all the muscles in your hands moved. That means the gun moved when you pulled the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's holding the gun steady and pressing the trigger. That's all there is to it. Your sight alignment, sight picture, that's a little bit, but it's really not that bad. And then trusting your fundamentals. And we talk about using the back of your mind and letting your subconscious do the work. Come on, at 70 meters where the front sight is bigger than the target,
yeah,
it doesn't sit steady. When you look over that thing is waving back and forth, and it's bigger than the target. Well, if you try to time it, your brain is always lagging by a tenth to two-tenths of a second, and you're trying to time it as that thing goes back and forth, yeah, and you're trying to slap the trigger and get there, you're too late. The gun, by the time you say, oh, now, and pull the trigger, that gun has already passed through the target and now is on the other side of the target, and you miss the target
and you
every
miss
single
it.
Time.
That's right.
Every single time. If you just put the gun out there the best you can, hold and press the trigger,
yeah,
the back of your mind will help you out and your subconscious will do the math and you have way more chance of doing a hit. I mean, yeah, we had one of the people struggling with making some hits at 40 and 50 meters and I just told them, okay, press the trigger slower. And they look at me like I got a third eye at the beginning. Press it slower. You're trying to press the trigger too fast. Press it slower, but the gun moves. Don't worry about it. Just press the trigger nice and slow, straight through. Okay. Boom, bing. We hit the steel.
Yep.
And I look like a stinking genius.
you're a genius, Ben.
Yeah, but it's just little tricks. And I love seeing the student. And the student's like, ah, I did it. You know, up and down, ready
it worked,
to jump up and
it
down.
Worked.
Yeah, one of those students, you got to be like, oh, wait, put the gun away first. And now jump up and down happy.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so it was really cool to see people advance like that and give them little tricks. But you get a good instructor, you have little tiny tricks like that, and it gets real easy when they see, oh, well, you know, I can see all the muscles in your forearms moving.
Yep.
That means you're moving your whole hand, just move your trigger finger.
And one of the things that proved to me that it's mostly trigger control, one of our students, she was shooting a Ruger GP100 revolver. And we were at about, I think, 30 meters. And she was having a hard time making hits, just couldn't hit. And I told her, I said, cock the hammer on your revolver, shoot it single action. First shot, she made a hit. It's because that single action trigger, it's easier to press. The gun's not going to move. Your finger doesn't have to move as much when you press it. And when she reholstered, she turned around and looked at me, and I said, it's all about the trigger.
Yeah, it's real. And why wouldn't? We have different varying opinions of that, and I goof around and say cheating sometimes, but you're not really cheating.
No.
Your Ruger GP100 was designed to shoot that way.
Yep.
You're using the gun to its full potential to make a very, very hard, long shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, you know, a lot of instructors will say cheating and stuff, and they will, like, you know, you get in trouble with court for cheating and blah, blah, blah. It's not cheating. We joke around that it's cheating, but it's really using the gun as it was designed to realize its full potential and your full potential as a shooter. Why wouldn't you?
At the distance of 30 meters, you know, if you have to take a self-defense shot at 30 meters, and there are situations you'd have to do that, I don't think you're going to get in trouble because you cocked the hammer at that distance.
Probably not. I mean, there was the Texas shooting a couple years ago where the police officer got pinned down. The guy had a Mini 14. There's trading shots with the cop behind the car, but the guy had really good cover behind a giant oak tree. And the other guy came out with his 357 Magnum, and he was it? I forget if it was a Colt or a. I think it was a Colt.
I think it was a Colt, and it was about a 55-yard shot, I think.
I think it was 64 is what I read somewhere. Like they paced it off at 64. But he went over the hood of a car, cocked the hammer, and made a hit. Cocked the hammer and made a hit.
And he saved the police officer's life.
Cocked the hammer and made a hit. So, yeah, that the officer's department presented him with a big plaque that said, nice shooting, pretty much. You know, good job. Thank you very much. The officer said, thank you very much. Did you know that later Governor Perry came down and he said, we want to give you something more in tune to long-range shooting that you're capable of?
1911?
No, he gave him an AR-10 .308 rifle. So
that's good.
It was, yeah, but so that's possible, and the probability is if you can get a nice rest and you have the time and you're shooting a double-action revolver or a double-action handgun like a SIG or a Beretta 92, yeah, cock the hammer and use the gun to its full potential. It shouldn't be a default for you to cop the hammer, and you shouldn't be cocking the hammer to try to intimidate people, and you shouldn't be cocking the hammer just to cock the hammer. But if you're going to make a 50 to 100-meter shot with your handgun that's well beyond, it's in within the gun's capabilities, but it's well beyond the range of where we normally think a handgun range is,
yeah,
use the gun to its full potential. And the way it was designed. Cock a stupid hammer.
You're right. And we have to think about today, 2017. We have to think about the threats we face today. You know, the active shooters, the terrorists, the people that, you know, want to shoot people at baseball practice and stuff like that. You know, and you could find yourself taking shots well beyond 25 yards.
They're shooting with you at a rifle at 100 meters. They are wearing bomb vests. Or they have a big bag that they're lugging around with them that either has multiple guns in it or a bomb. You want to engage them at the max effective range possible with your handgun. What is that for you? Have you made a shot at 50?
You need
60,
to know what that distance
meters?
Is.
Do you know that your handgun will fire out to 100 meters? Do you know that your 9mm round will actually make it 200 meters? Can you make that shot? Do you know what the drop is at 200 meters? Because at 200 meters, your 9mm is falling. At 100 meters, your 9mm is not. On a full-size 45, 4 or 5-inch barrel, at 100 meters, don't worry about the drop. If you aim at up high center chest on somebody, it'll probably drop around mid-sternum to gut. I'm going this much. Can you see this much?
Oh, yeah, yeah, they can see that.
But it's 4 or 5 inches, maybe. And you can pull the drop charts. I know. I've seen them all. The drop charts don't account for how far over the barrel your sight line is and at what point they cross. Right. With all the 1911s I've shot, with all the 45s I've seen, I got news for you. At 100 yards, you're getting a 4 or 5 inch drop. At 150 yards with your 45 and a full 4 or 5 inch barrel like a Glock, now you have to hold over and you're getting too much drop to really play with. Out at 150, your Glock is still 4 or 5 inches. You're good. Your Glock 9mm. Out at 200, now you're aiming over his head to hit him.
Well, last time I checked, gravity still exists, doesn't it?
Gravity works every time things fall. But we think it's way too far. You know, at 100 yards, you're thinking, oh, my 45, I'm looping it in there. I'm going to have to aim over his head or something. Nope. Just aim high center chest like you would all the time and do your best. Because at 100 yards with your handgun, you're not good enough to see where that drop actually is. Just go for it.
And, you know, although all of us would love to fantasize about being able to pull out the AR-15 and take out a threat that's, you know, 125 yards away that's threatening either us or some loved ones and things like that, let's get real here. You know, most of us don't carry AR-15s around on our body all the time, and we're going to be left with a handgun. And as concealed carry gets more and more popular, you know what I've noticed? The handguns get smaller and smaller the more popular concealed carry gets. And so now you may have to make this long range shot and you got a small handgun because it's easier to conceal. But oh no, now you're 25, 30 yards away and you got to make a shot. Now what?
And now I'm trying to keep it G rated here. You're in trouble. A lot of trouble.
Exactly.
The little guns, though, today will do it. I was at the class the one time we backed out to 100 meters. Well, at 75 meters, somebody bet me that I couldn't make a hit with my little LCR. I made like 3 out of 5 at 75 meters with my little LCR Ruger revolver. That's the plastic revolver in 38 Special that has a 1 7/8-inch barrel.
Polymer revolver, not and plastic.
It's plastic. So the guns are the guns and the ammunition make it possible for us to do this. Our biggest limiting factor is always our brain.
Especially the ammunition is good. Well,
we get out there and we look at that little pocket gun. You pull that thing out and you look at how far that target is away, and you're like, will the bullet even get there? Is it going to follow the earth before it gets there? Because it looks that far when you're looking over the sights of your handgun.
Yeah, that's true.
So you just got to get in there, and you got to be able to get out someplace in a class where you can play with it. And we're not the only ones that do long-range shooting. There's a lot of classes that do that.
Sure.
But get out someplace where you can do that. And yeah, it's goofing around, and it is fun as all get out, but you really see what the handgun is capable of.
And there's another reason to practice it. You know, not in addition to having to take a long-range shot in self-defense, if you can make a decent hit consistently at 25 yards, if you can do it regularly over and over and over again, you're going to be that much better at 5 yards or at 10 yards or 12 yards, because if you're practicing at twice the distance, naturally you're going to be a lot better.
Or reduced size targets at smaller distances become very easy.
Right.
So you really get that stupid shootout where somebody's shooting over a car at you or behind cover. Now you have a reduced size target to shoot at.
Right.
And you look at it over your sights and you go, oh my gosh, my front sight is bigger than this guy's shoulder that's sticking out.
Yeah.
Well, but I've done this at 75 yards, so it looks the same. It looks the same, and it feels the same, so I know I can do it. So you get that confidence to be able to make those shots.
That's the thing. That's the thing. You have the confidence of the longer shots, makes you that much better at close distances.
Yeah, and you really learn your trigger control and your shakes at those longer distances.
I had the shakes today. I don't know why. Especially when I got out there long distance. I mean, I was making it work, and I was aided by the red dot, but I had the shakes. I was like this. I don't, you know, maybe I drank too much coffee or something this morning.
I think the amount of caffeine the two of us did to survive this trip was astronomical. I've never seen you drink so much coffee.
Oh, come on.
And I drink a lot of caffeine normally. You have one or two cups in the morning.
Yeah.
But I think this morning you had 3 or 4.
Maybe.
And yesterday, I think you had 4 before we left the hotel.
No, I had 2 at the hotel and I think 2 at breakfast.
Okay, so he had 4 yeah,
I had
in the
4.
Morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he had a lot of caffeine. It happens.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I haven't been sleeping good on the road lately.
Yeah, well, me neither. That's why I was drinking copious amounts of energy drinks to offset the lack of sleep. So I'm going to blame that on my bad shooting today.
All right.
It was the caffeine.
Final thoughts. What are your final thoughts on the whole weekend class?
I love getting out here and meeting the people from Illinois. You know, you're always afraid when you go someplace new, and especially when everybody jokes in the firing community that it's the Iron Curtain, and they hate guns, and they hate freedom, and they hate people, and they hate real Americans. You hear all these horrible, horrible things.
That's only inner city Chicago.
A couple people lived in inner city Chicago pretty much and came out to our class.
Oh, that's true.
So, and they were great people. It was nice to meet a bunch of people. We had breakfast in Illinois the one time, and that waitress was an awesome person, just a lot of fun. And we met all those people that actually live here, and they were a lot of fun. So final thoughts on that was I was blessed to be able to come to Illinois because it was a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of great people, and now I have a little different view of what Illinois actually is. It's not Chicago on the TV.
Well, and for people that might not know, the range where we conducted the class is in Richmond, Illinois. And if you look at the map, Richmond is like only 2 miles south of the Wisconsin border. So we literally were pretty much all weekend at the border of Illinois and Wisconsin. And so this, you know, it's a very rural area. And it's, you know, a relatively conservative area. And, you know, there's big differences between Milwaukee and Chicago and rural southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois. But I agree with you. You know, it's I think Illinois gets too bad of a rap sometimes because, you know, you got one giant city that seems to
cast its big shadow over the whole state, and I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, maybe the state should get together and, you know, I don't know how to say it, secede from Chicago.
There you go. Illinois, secede from Chicago. That's good. All right, thanks, Ben.
All right, thanks, Have a good one. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Well, that wraps it up, folks. That's all I got for you in this episode, which I think is quite a lot. That should give you some things to think about and maybe to work on. Once again, check out the new videos on the Shooters Club, because one of the videos is taken directly from last week's class, and it's live footage that I put up there about action versus reaction. And Ben did a real good job teaching it. A couple students did a real good job demonstrating it out on the shooting range. So I want to close this episode with a couple of things. First, I want to say life is short, ladies and gentlemen. Life is very short. And so I encourage you to do the things that you want to do. Just do them. Just buy what you want to buy. Do what you want to do. Say the things that you need to say to people. Say it. Don't hold it back. Good or bad, don't hold it back. Forgive people and read your Bible every day. So I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Guess what? Several of us heard clicks when we were expecting a bang because we didn't know what condition our gun was in. Bad move. Bad move. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.